The ultimate goal is to provide to every patient in the world access to therapeutically relevant diagnostic information.
How many patients are we speaking about?
Millions.
Hi, I'm Alex, and welcome to the X-Health Show, where I talk to visionaries behind the latest innovations in healthcare for the extra health of the future. We're in Basel, in a cozy neighborhood in the shadow of the two tallest buildings in Switzerland, the Roche Towers. Professor Christian Ruiz is the Chief Scientific Officer at Moonlight AI. Now at the University of Basel, he used to be responsible for a diagnostic laboratory at the University Hospital Basel, which processes more than 100,000 biopsies a day. Moonlight AI is an early-stage Swiss startup that developed a platform to detect genomic aberrations in blood cancers by analyzing the image of a blood smear. You'll hear about cancer diagnostics in highly specialized centers, why is next-generation sequencing so expensive, and how AI and computer vision can allow targeted therapies for leukemias and lymphomas at a fraction of a current cost. Christian, so you claim that you can go from 2 weeks, I mean 2 weeks when is now needed to diagnose leukemia, to 1 hour. How's that possible? Just quickly, if you could reply to that, is there a quick answer to that?
Yes, there is a quick answer actually, because we are looking only at the slide, at the images of a blood smear. And we are not taking the blood and performing some sequencing, like next generation sequencing. And this analysis of the image of a blood takes actually less than 1 hour.
Yeah, and there's what, AI or machine learning involved?
Yes, for sure. It's computer vision powered by neural networks.
So we'll come back to that. But first, could you say, why did you start with leukemia? Why blood cancers, or like this type of blood cancer?
Yeah, Moonlight AI is interested in analyzing tumor cells within liquid environments. So it was actually obvious that we first move to leukemia. But then we will also move to other tumor types in which tumor cells are detected within liquid environments.
So solid tumors in liquid environments?
Exactly. There are also solid tumors that produce tumor cells that then you can diagnose in liquid environments.
So what's so special about this liquid environment?
It's actually, that's a very good question. They're just different from the structure. If you take out a tumor biopsy from a human body, from a human, then the biopsy from a solid tissue, then the solid tissue has some kind of a tissue architecture. So the tumor cells are in a microenvironment with non-tumor cells, with blood cells, etc. If you take a blood sample, for example, and then you have a look at this blood sample under the microscope, then you will have a random distribution of the different cells. You will have normal cells and you will have tumor cells, but they are randomly distributed on there. On the slide. So it is a big difference between solid tissue diagnostics and actually blood tumor diagnostics.
Is it like, can you actually have the sample or like the biopsy of a solid tumor that there is, I mean, the part of the tumor that there is no tumor cells? Or like, I'm just thinking like, you know, is it more evenly distributed in the blood, or how much blood do you need to basically diagnose it?
It's done with a standard blood draw. And if you put this blood on a microscopic slide, then you will have more or less 2 million cells on that slide. But the tumor cells might be only 0.01% of these cells.
Oh, wow.
So it depends on the tumor type as well as on the stage of the tumor.
Okay, can we just go one step back and define what is leukemia, what are the characteristics of it?
Leukemia originates actually from the bone marrow, and it primarily affects the blood and the bone marrow. And it's nothing else than so-called abnormal growth of white blood cells. And if a patient has this abnormal growth of white blood cells, his body might not be able to fight infections. And you have to imagine that these white blood cells are part of the body's immune system. They help the body fight against infections as well as other diseases. And there are different types, actually, of white blood cells. Maybe you know them, for example, granulocytes, monocytes, but also these classic T cells and B cells.
Okay, and there are basically too many of them, right? And this is also like it can be discovered like a regular blood draw, right?
Yes, and this is done in standard diagnostics. This is actually diagnosed in a regular analysis. And where we actually moonlight comes into the game is when we're talking about the genomic aberrations that these tumor cells have or carry. And these are the ones that we are able to analyze with our computer vision algorithms.
Mm-hmm. What are the aberrations? Like, how do they look like? Or
yes, there are different types of genomic aberration. But first of all, I would quickly like to explain how these genomic aberrations, why these genomic aberrations are within the tumor cells.
Awesome. Yeah, please.
A tumor evolves. And during this evolution, when a tumor grows, it acquires genomic aberrations. Some of them are maybe only bystander aberrations. They have no effect, no impact on the tumor cell growth. Others lead to an advantage for the tumor cells. So they can grow faster, they may be more resistant, etc. And many of these cells are serving nowadays as so-called targets of specific therapeutics, cancer therapeutics. It's not like a chemotherapy anymore, in which all cells, all dividing cells are killed. But now we are talking about targeting specific cells that harbor a specific genomic aberration. Because this genomic aberration can lead to the aberrant expression, for example, of a protein.
So in other words, you have this aberrant expression that can be targeted with some specific treatment just for this, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, I think, let's say, the easiest way to explain it would be like, for example, a tumor cell has a mutation, and this mutation, this is just maybe one or two bases difference in DNA. And this mutation of a mutation of a particular gene, and this mutation leads to a slightly different protein. And this slightly different protein you can target with a drug. So only these cells, only the cells that harbor these slightly different protein will be killed by the drug, and not just all cells. And this is the advantage of the so-called targeted therapies. They're also, depending on the company who sells the drug, they call it precision medicine or personalized medicine.
Okay, so you're not killing everything that is there, so patient can recover quicker, right?
The most important thing, yes, is that the patient's tumor responds to the therapy. Mm. That's actually the primary goal.
Okay, because you can actually give a treatment that is not for this tumor. I mean, if you don't have this diagnosis that can actually detect what is in this tumor or what is the aberration, you can actually give something like a general chemotherapy that kills everything.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's an advantage to have these targeted therapies, definitely. But in order to administer these targeted therapies, you have to know if the tumor harbors specific genomic aberration. This means that you and I, for example, we can have, let's say, more or less the same tumor type, but you will have a different genomic aberration in the tumor than I. And this means actually that you will receive another treatment than I will receive.
How do you look for these aberrations?
Well, like quickly to explain, there are different types of aberrations. Let's say there are genomic amplifications, for example. This means that the gene of interest is not only present two times in the cell, in your tumor cell, but maybe 10 or 20 times. This leads then to an increased expression of the protein. But there are also some kind of mutations, for example, that where you one or two bases or a few bases are exchanged. This can lead to an aberrant expression of the protein to the expression of a protein that is activated all the time. There are also deletions of genes, that deletions are not present anymore. And this can be this can have a dramatic effect on the tumor, because if it affects, if the deletion, if a gene is deleted that serves, let's say, as a gatekeeper of the cell growth, then if you kill that gatekeeper, if you remove that gatekeeper, then the cell may grow abnormally. So it's quite important to analyze these genomes, or let's say these genes for mutations.
That's right.
At the end of the day, we're ending out of biomarkers, yeah. Yes. And what I would like to add, it depends from tumor type to tumor type which genes we analyze or which genes are analyzed in diagnostics. For example, for CLL, chronic lymphocytic leukemia, the genes to analyze are IGHV as well as TP53. If we now go into lung cancer, for example, the genes that are analyzed are EGFR, KRAS, the ALK gene, RET, as well as, for example, HER2.
Are these the biomarkers that you're looking for?
Exactly. These are the so-called genomic biomarkers, and those are very specific for a tumor. So depending, again, these are the genomic biomarkers that are analyzed in a standard diagnostic process. Yes.
What does this standard diagnostic process look like now? So what is basically the gold standard now for patients with hematological cancers?
In order to define the presence of these genomic biomarkers in countries like Switzerland, Germany, or the US, many laboratories use next-generation sequencing. This is a very powerful sequencing technology. There are other ways to analyze those tumors too. For example, like if you want to analyze a larger genomic aberration, like, for example, an amplification of a gene or a deletion, then you could also do a so-called FISH, a fluorescence in situ hybridization. Or you can also go for some real-time PCR-based approaches. But NGS is at the moment, at least in the large laboratories, it has become the method of choice.
What does it look like? Like, basically, practically, what do you need to have this next generation sequencing?
Next generation sequencing, it's a technology. It was also called massive parallel sequencing because in comparison to the old sequencing techniques, it allows to sequence in parallel hundreds or thousands of bases. So it's more powerful, it's faster. And thanks to it, we do now know way more about genomics than before. It has led to a dramatic advance in cancer research.
Since when it's been available?
In diagnostic, I would say approximately 10 years.
If a hospital wants to use it, like what do they need? Because I can imagine it's for hospitals, or is it for any other diagnostic centers?
It's for large diagnostic institutions. You have to consider that setting up NGS laboratory may cost you approximately 1 million. This is what you need in order to set it up. It's not just the device itself, but you need all these processes in advance. You need DNA extraction processes, you need library preparation processes, QC processes, etc. And then at the end, you end up with your sample on the NGS device, the genes of interest are sequenced, and then you also need the bioinformatic analysis.
How long does this process last?
In general, the process takes on average 2 weeks.
Uh-huh. So this is what we started actually, right? So this is what you actually want to shorten the time.
Exactly, because maybe one comment, it's the patient has to wait during these 2 weeks for the treatment decision. Because treatment decision is taken when the sequencing data, when this genomic biomarker information is available. So this means nothing else than 2 weeks of waiting for the patient.
For whom are these diagnostic possibilities possible? I mean, it's probably too wide a question, but you know, you already mentioned it's available in Switzerland, Germany, somewhere in the US. Could you characterize these diagnostic centers, or like basically who or how many people would be able to have that diagnosis done?
That's the problem at the moment, that most patients out there do not have access to these technologies. You have large centers in, let's say, rather rich countries who can afford these diagnostic devices. But there are many publications out there showing that even in the European Union, most of the people do not have access to next-generation sequencing in a diagnostic setting.
Oh, why is that?
Because it's expensive.
How much does it cost?
A test, here in Switzerland, a test usually starts at 1,500. And depending on the regions that you want to analyze, it can end at 5,000 to 6,000.
So the cost is a barrier? Is there anything else?
The cost is a barrier. In addition, you have also the barrier of that you need qualified people to analyze it. And then And yes, although I said it's very powerful technology, it has also some disadvantages when you apply it in diagnostics. Cells in diagnostic, the tumor cells that you analyze in diagnostics are fixed. So this means that when you extract the DNA out of these tumor cells, out of these cells, the DNA is fragmented. So you have to adapt the protocols for it. If you do not do it, because you maybe do not know how to do it, then you will have a lower quality output. The same is true if you use a tumor sample, a tumor biopsy, in which the tumor cell content is, for example, below 20%. Then NGS does not work as you want, because you may get false negatives, because NGS is then not sensitive enough to detect a mutation.
So you worked in this environment when you had this next generation sequencing. When did you start, or what made you actually start thinking how to, I don't know, improve it, make it better? What was the innovation process behind it?
You're right. The pathology of the University Hospital of Basel was one of the first ones who introduced next generation sequencing for standard diagnostics. It also became the market leader in Switzerland. And I'm still convinced that it's a very powerful technology. But again, not everybody can benefit from it. If you go now to other countries, even to Eastern Europe, there are many countries that in which patients do not have access to this technology. And this is a pity, because these patients cannot be treated with the right drug, because they do not have this therapeutically relevant genomic biomarker information available. This is actually what we want to change.
Yeah, and how did you self-reflected on that? Or how did you come up to the conclusion that there's something that can be done about that?
That's a very good question, actually. Just let me think. It was most probably a mix between people not having access and also realizing that molecular sequencing analysis, like for example, NGS, has some disadvantages, that it takes too long, it's too expensive, for example, and that we can do it faster by taking advantage of artificial intelligence and actually computer vision. Because there's so much information within the morphology of the tumor cells. This is actually when we realized, also by talking to pathologists, experienced pathologists and hematologists, that there is a lot of information actually hidden within the morphology, within the subcellular morphology of the tumor cells.
We'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by The X-Health Show and me, Alex. If you still haven't, please hit follow at the top. That'll help me bring more of these visionaries to you. Thanks a lot. Stay awesome now. Back to the episode.
It's something that they don't see when they look under the microscope?
Exactly. A very experienced hematopathologist just came to me, and when I was talking to him, he told me that, well, he thinks that he sees some mutation. He doesn't, for sure, he cannot see the mutation, but what he meant was actually the impact of this mutation on the subcellular morphology.
Okay, please explain. What does it mean?
Well, if we're looking now at a driving mutation, or let's say a mutation that is relevant for the tumor cells to grow, and those are the ones that are usually targeted by the therapies, this driving mutation was actually selected during tumor evolution. And this driver mutation has given rise to a protein. And this protein is actually the important part. And this protein leads then to a different behavior of the cells, or to a specific resistance mechanism. And this protein may lead to a change in the subcellular morphology. It means the cell look a little bit different.
So like the structure of them, or like how they stick together.
For example, or within the cell. If you look within the cell, they might be differences in how they look like. But those differences, most probably we cannot see them with our human eyes on the microscope.
Right. And that's why actually it's sent for this genomic test, right? Which goes deeper into what, like, even under microscope, we cannot see.
Exactly. We cannot see them. And so some diagnostic institution, they just extract the DNA out of the tumor cells and then subject them to molecular testing. And okay. what we at Moonlight say is, okay, we do not need that molecular testing, or at least not for all the case, for all patients. We take tumors, we look at the tumor cells with computer vision, and then we're able to define if the tumor cells harbors a mutation or not.
Yeah, this is very interesting. So there was like this experienced hematopathologist that actually thought he may see something that he shouldn't see, or like he shouldn't be able to see, but there is this feeling that there is something different, right?
Exactly.
And something that can be seen, but not through a human eye, basically.
Yeah, what he said is he thinks that tumor cells of a specific tumor type with a specific mutation just look different under the microscope. He was not able to say what exactly, but he just had this feeling.
How many samples of blood samples such a specialist looks into, like a day or a week?
This can be hundreds.
Okay.
So they're very experienced, actually.
Right. Yeah. And okay, so you had that feeling that there might be something. What did you do with that? Like, did you start looking for like someone with whom to discuss it, or like, I'm just asking, like, how did you ended up founding Moonlight AI?
Well, at this time, we had already founded Moonlight AI, honestly. This was a time when I met Seze again, and he's co-founder of Moonlight. So actually, we are four co-founders, Seze, Nicole, and Stefan. Nicole is the chief technology officer, and Stefan is a hemato-oncologist working at the Charité in Berlin. And this was actually a time when I met Seze, and Seze and I have been, we know each other now for more than 30 years. We have been together at primary school.
That's awesome. So you two met in the primary school, and then, yeah, you happened to found a startup together.
Yeah, well, there were some kind of 30 years between these two events, let's say that way. And he moved then into pharma. He studied business and administration. Then he moved into pharma. And I, after school, I moved into cancer research, actually. I've been working for many years in cancer research. And at some point, we met each other again, and then we discussed about diagnostics, because he was working for pharma and I was at the diagnostic institution at the pathology. And then we started talking about diagnostics. We started talking about how we could speed up some processes, how we could make diagnostics more accessible in the world. And that's actually then the time when we start to think really about building up a startup that can focus on these topics. And then we also talk to different hematologists and also pathologists, how they see it, if they see a sense behind it, if they know use cases patients could benefit. And this is the reason why then we decided for some specific use cases, and then we started collecting the data.
What does it mean, like you started collecting the data?
Yeah, well, this is actually more complicated than it seems, because you cannot just start, you cannot just go to a hospital and ask for data.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking. Yeah.
That's no way. Well, you can do it, but it will not be successful. So what we like actually to do is to start research collaborations with larger hospitals, for example. And for this purpose, you have to define the project, but you also need ethical approval in order to do this. So this was actually one of the first tasks that we had.
And you had something like a working hypothesis when
Yes.
you started. What was it?
That's right. And I think that's a very good question. It's our working hypothesis was, or is still the working hypothesis, that these genomic aberrations that are so relevant and significant for the cell, these genomic aberrations have an impact on the morphology of the cell. And this morphology we may or not able to see under the microscope, but computer vision is able to detect it.
Why is this? So basically, what is computer vision?
You can train neural networks to detect images. I think the easiest example, you can train a model to differentiate between cats and dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This sounds obvious, since we as human can also do it.
Or like we have, for example, in an iPhone, right? The face recognition.
Yes, that's right. But you can also feed the models with images from tumor cells that are categorized in, but you can also feed the model with images from tumor cells that look at first glance for us humans just identical. But part of the subset, let's say half of it, has a genomic aberration, and the other half of it does not have the genomic aberration. And now you're asking the question, if there is some difference in morphology between these two groups, of the group of the mutated versus the non-mutated. And if you and I, if we look under the microscope at these morphologies, the question, our answer would be most probably no, we don't see a difference. But computer vision, which is actually unbiased, has a different approach on analyzing these images. And it can also go into a higher resolution. And this is the reason why we think that with computer vision, we will be able to detect not all, but let's say the most relevant genomic aberrations.
So you already proved that the concept is quite right about that. So how did you go about checking this? So I can imagine you were looking for some samples that you already knew that the cancer, that the patient had cancer, and then you were looking for some samples that the patient didn't have cancer. Is that the way you went to have the proof of concept?
That's not completely right. We only, for the proof of concept, we only used samples from patients with cancer. Part of these patients' tumors were characterized by a specific mutation, and the other ones didn't have this mutation. And so we trained the proof of concept to differentiate between these two groups, actually, the mutated positive tumor cells and the non-mutated tumor cells.
How many samples did you need?
We had a limited cohort of roughly 70 to 80 samples. And this is very limited for such an approach. But we were able to see that it works.
Already.
Yes. And that was actually a great moment for us and for Moonlight, because we knew that our hypothesis is true and that we will be able, with a larger data set, to optimize this model for higher sensitivity and higher specificity so that we can implement it into the clinics.
Did you share that with this hematopathologist that was having that feeling?
Yes.
What did he say? I knew that.
Exactly. More or less like this, yes. And what we are doing now in the follow-up project, now we have to move from this proof of concept into a real product that we can implement into the clinics. And for this, we are collecting now the data of roughly 800 to 1,000 patient samples.
Mm-hmm. And you also are going to do this in collaboration with University of Basel Hospital, or? Yeah.
Yeah, with University Hospital of Basel, as well as with other centers. So we are building up now a multi-center data collection.
Can you say like which centers you already?
Unfortunately, not.
Okay, right. So University of Basel, let's stick to that. So I saw Cesar actually presenting at the Basel Health Tech Conference, and he said that, well, you claim actually that there is this 80% of accuracy of the test. So what did you compare it with? Like, how did you basically make that claim?
During that presentation, Cesar was referring to the 80% sensitivity that our proof of model has. And this is a surprisingly good result for a proof of concept, because the model that we developed was not optimized for sensitivity or specificity or for any accuracy. We just wanted to see if there is signals, if there are signals in the cells that confirm our hypothesis. This means if computer vision can differentiate between mutation positive and mutation negative tumor cells. And this was actually the goal. The model had a sensitivity of 80%. This is correct. And now it's up to us in the subsequent project to improve this sensitivity to reach over 90% in order to being able to implement this model or the further development of this model into the clinics.
So basically to train it on more samples That's what you mentioned before.
Exactly. This is what we have to do now.
Mm-hmm. And there was, you know, also during this Basel Health Tech conference, you know, there was like a skeptical voice from the audience, you know, asking, are you trying to convince me that you're going to make live decision on a smear? You know, because like the standard, as you mentioned before, is actually a genetic test, like a very expensive genetic test that also takes, as you mentioned, you know, a few rooms, highly specialized professionals and equipment. And then you want, what, just a smear on the glass?
Yes.
Okay.
That's great.
Yeah. So you're removing the next expensive step and can take it to this, you know, yeah, the blood analysis basically step.
We'll be right back. I want to say thank you for listening to this episode. If you find it interesting and feel particularly generous today, leave a review, hit this star rating. I'll be able to continue with the X-Health show for you. 3, 2, 1, and back to the episode.
At the end of the day, yes, I'm convinced that this will work. It will not work for all mutations and for all tumor types, but for the ones that it works, yes, you can do this analysis on a simple image of the blood smear. But we have to take into consideration that a blood smear, it's not just, let's say, a red surface. A blood smear in a microscopic slide contains 2 million cells. And within these 2 million cells, you also have the tumor cells. So at the end of the day, what we're analyzing with our algorithms are the morphology, the subcellular morphology of these tumor cells. And what sequencing or these molecular tests are doing, that's just taking these cells and analyzing the DNA. So it's not just a simple blood smear. It's more. We are talking about the subcellular morphology analysis of the tumor cells. But just to answer your question, yes, that's right.
So that's, that's bold. And that's actually, when do you think this could be achieved?
We plan to finish the development of our first solution, the one we have, the POC, now second half next year.
Okay, 2025,
exactly. And to implement it into the clinics for prospective testing.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned, like, what kind of blood cancers are you going to focus on?
At the moment, we are focusing on chronic lymphocytic leukemia, but we also have plans in other leukemia types, let's say that way.
Okay. So you first focus on chronic lymphocytic leukemia, and then when you have that, well, library, then you're going to expand.
Yes. What we have done now, we have developed the KNOC, the core technology, the so-called platform. We have also filed the patent for it. And now we are moving into different applications based on this platform.
What do you think, like, how this field can develop in the future? Because this is something, well, moving fast, right? This is fast-moving environment. So what would you expect? How would that change in the future? Or, I don't know, improve? What can you expect will be new that you will also be able to use basically in your solution?
Let me start by answering this question a little bit different. It's the innovation will also be how to implement these solutions, these computer vision solutions or artificial intelligence solutions into diagnostic routine. One possibility, for example, will be to use them as so-called first-line diagnostics. And this can be implemented in laboratories with reliable next generation sequencing, for example, so that you can run these AI algorithms on the images and in the majority of the cases, base the treatment decision on the result of this analysis. And then if the image analysis is, let's say, not completely satisfactory, then you go as a second line diagnostics into the sequencing. This would allow, first of all, would allow to save money to the healthcare insurance providers or to the hospitals. And second, for a majority of the patients, after this first computer vision analysis, the patients could immediately start with the treatment. So there would be no additional waiting time of 2 weeks. So I think the innovation will be in how to implement this into clinical routine. And what we have not talked about it yet is that there are not many companies within blood cancer developing this type of approach. There are many more companies doing this for solid tissue pathology. So we also expect that from that part, we will get sooner or later, all solutions will be implemented into pathology institutions.
What can be the issue in implementing that? What can be a problem? Like, will the hospitals or the diagnostic centers, will they need any new, devices or...
Many large laboratories have already so-called digitization devices, like scanners, for example. So there will be no need in adding additional infrastructure.
So just the software or...?
It's just the software. It's, in our case, it will be also connecting to our servers. But I think it also requires a little bit of a mindset change. We all know that not all people are very confident with regard to applications of artificial intelligence.
Hence the skeptical question, right?
Exactly. This is, why should artificial intelligence be able to provide me with the diagnosis that leads to the treatment? So shall I base the decision on my treatment on an algorithm? But at the end of the day, what if you look at the molecular analysis, actually there you have also a lot of algorithms that come up then with the result if a mutation is present or not. And for sure, and what is very, very important also in order to gain confidence is that these algorithms must be reliable. So they must be trained with large data sets. They shall also be trained with data sets from different centers. And in my opinion, they should also be the results should also be published.
And then, well, you are lucky, I guess, that you work at the University Hospital of Basel.
I was part of Diagnostic Institution of the Pathology, which I learned a lot about diagnostics.
But then your colleagues, they were open to test what you, well, you're basically working hypothesis. And so they not that skeptical about it. Or I mean, they are scientists. They probably always skeptical, but they are happy to, to test.
Yes. With the, let's say that the solution we are developing at the moment, the one for CLL, that one is developed together with hematologists and less with pathologists. And the people we are working with, the hematologists we are working with, yes, they are open to test it. And one of the reasons why they are open to test it is because we are developing actually this together with them in a research collaboration. And this helps a lot. And this is also for us a very important point, because we receive their feedback. And if we develop solutions together with, let's call them key opinion leaders, these people, these hematologists or these hematologists or oncologists that are dealing or are treating patients on a daily basis, if we develop the solutions together with them, then we can be sure that our solutions at the end of the day will have an impact on the patient, that we're not just developing them for fun, but that they can be useful and implemented in the clinical process.
What was the feedback so far? Well, was there anything that made you, pivot from some original idea that you had, or that basically gave you some building blocks?
I think what was crucial, and this is still something very essential, and when we talk to clinicians, they come up with many additional ideas, what we could implement, or what we could develop next. And this is, I was surprised actually. These are not only clinicians that we know for a long time, but these are also people that we got to know recently, and they liked our approach, they liked our idea, and they came up with additional ones and say, wait, why don't you go for this tumor aberration or this genomic aberration in that and that tumor?
And you're taking notes. And it's like,
and we are
next.
Taking notes, exactly. Yes, that's absolutely right. And because for sure, we are at the moment an early stage startup. We cannot afford to just run 20 projects in parallel, but we have tons of ideas. And many of them, they come from the clinics.
Mm-hmm. So I can imagine, like, when you have this, already the library of huge data sets, then you will be moving into creating another libraries for another aberrations.
Exactly. this is what we are planning. And again, we are not only focusing on leukemia, we're also focusing on other tumor types, but it's a little bit out of scope if we would talk about this now.
Okay. Is there anything like a Moonlight AI ultimate goal?
I would say the ultimate goal is to provide to every patient in the world access to diagnostic information, to therapeutically relevant diagnostic information.
How many patients are we speaking about?
Millions. Because the accurate diagnostics is key to choose the right treatment.
We actually didn't speak about like how less would it cost, because I can imagine it would cost also, I mean, it's also that the time is shortened to, like you'd say, less than 1 hour. This is what you aim at. But also with the software, I can also imagine like the cost also drops dramatically.
Exactly. For sure, our solution will not cost thousands of dollars
per person
per analysis. No, this doesn't make sense. Definitely not. And I think the cost that we have at the moment in next generation sequencing or molecular testing, I'm absolutely fine with those, because you have large laboratory infrastructures that you have to pay. You have a lot of qualified people, fantastic people working in those laboratories. And you have a huge IT infrastructure doing then the so-called bioinformatic analysis. And this has a price tag. And you have to charge these tests $1,500 or even more.
And I'm also, what I'm hearing, it's not that you are aiming at replacing that, right? Because who can afford it.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. But there's no need to replace it. There are different ways on how to implement this in clinical routine. One was the one that I mentioned before, the first-line diagnostics, to get as a faster result to the patient and to save costs. But the other one is actually to implement this or give access to patients in countries in which they do not have the possibility that their samples are being analyzed on these high-end molecular testing devices.
So what do you need, basically, to bring it to these patients? What do you need to succeed, in other words? And, what are the next immediate steps for Moonlight AI?
For us, it's actually, at the moment, we have to continue development. We have to make this proof of concept that we have. We have to make it a so-called clinical-ready product. We are collecting data, and we are further optimizing the model so that it achieves the highest sensitivity and specificity. And then we also have to think on how do we implement this in the different diagnostic institutions. And for this, we are talking with healthcare providers. We are also talking with diagnostic institutions as well as with clinicians. In addition, we are also now looking for funds to continue and to finance the further development of these projects. So we are in the middle of a financing round.
Well, good luck with that then.
Thank you very much.
Christian, thank you very much for this very interesting conversation about tumor genetic aberrations and how to, find them, recognize them in liquid cancers. Well, I wish you good luck in gathering all you need to make that happen, because, as you say, millions of patients can be basically diagnosed faster and, have better treatment options to choose from. So thank you very much. And for you guys, if you want to, track what Moonlight AI are up to, please go to moonlight-ai.com. Thanks again.
Thank you very much.
I'm totally impressed by the audacity of researchers turned startup founders, doctors turned entrepreneurs, or ordinary parents turned healthcare innovators. People battling the battles that no one fought before for the extra health of the future. So if you see a startup posting on LinkedIn, show them some love, hit like, comment, that's fabulous. If you have a couple drops more of that altruism, follow the Exhale Show. Leave a review here. I'll be able to bring more of these visionaries to you. So a big thank you. You're awesome. See you next week.
The information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. If you have any medical questions, please consult your healthcare practitioner. The opinions on the show are Alex's or her guests. The podcast does not make any responsibility or warranties about guest statements or credibility. While the podcast makes every effort to ensure that the information shared is accurate, please let us know if you have any comments, suggestions, or corrections.